Bravo, bravissimo, a te fortuna, a te fortuna, a te fortuna, non mancherà. La 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 la. A te fortuna, a te fortuna, a te fortuna, non mancherà. Sono il pacotum della città, sono il pacotum della città, della città, della città, della città.
Hey Nick.
Hey Scott.
So, as a child, and I feel like this is probably true for most people, but like as a child, you go through there's a certain age when you have this sudden realization that there are characters, you know, like Donald Duck or I don't know, Power Rangers, the Muppets, you know. And you have like all of these characters, and then, you know, like Indiana Jones, Darth Vader, Luke Skywalker, all of those. And after it takes a while before you start to realize that those are just characters and that there are people that play those characters. I mean, I can't think of like the first time that I really realized that, but. What I think is interesting about that time period as a kid is that I always remember characters, and I remember thinking that like characters were just like, oh, this is a Luke Skywalker movie, you know? Mm-hmm. Not thinking, you know, oh, Mark Hamill or Carrie Fisher or Harrison Ford or whatever. It was always just the characters. But I remember even then, at that age, Robin Williams, to me, I always knew who Robin Williams was. And I thought of him, I think, more in terms of a character than I ever did as an actor. Like, he didn't really become an actor to me until I was much older. I always just knew Robin Williams. Like if my parents were talking about someone like, I don't know, Jack Lemmon or something like that, because I think I was a kid when that Grumpy Old Man movie came out. I don't know why that was the first thing that came to my mind, but you know, like, well, or Harrison Ford or whatever. If they were talking about those kinds of
actors,
I wouldn't know who that was until they would tell me the character that they played, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But Robin Williams was always Robin Williams. I think he was in himself like such a character that he surpassed any of the characters that he played. And it's he was a massive influence on my childhood, like huge. I couldn't even begin to tell you how many times I've seen Hook or Mrs. Doubtfire. I mean, those two movies I just would watch constantly. To the point where I'm still a little afraid to rewatch Hook because, you know, you hear people say, like, how bad it is. But, I mean, between those two movies and Aladdin, I really honestly can't think of another actor who had that big of an influence on my childhood. And he's gone now, and it's really rough. I don't know. You're a little younger than me, so I'm sure like your touchstones for him might be a little different than mine.
I think you'd be surprised. Like most children of the past 20 years, I couldn't begin to count the number of times I've seen Aladdin or like Mrs. Doubtfire or Hook, like you said. And by the way, Hook totally holds up.
Great.
Okay. I just watched it a few weeks ago. I've never understood the hate for that movie.
Okay, good.
I guess the people that I don't think like it are like pan purists and I guess like
cynical people. Cynics?
Yeah. And it is a messy movie. It is really long and weird. But I mean, I kind of love it for. I mean, I have a soft spot for Shaggy movies if their heart's in the right place.
Mm-hmm.
Strangely, the first thing that popped into my head when I found out that he had passed was his role in the movie Popeye. I remember we used to have this recorded VHS of it. It wasn't a movie we bought of Popeye. Like my mom and dad had recorded it. And I don't even remember a time when that tape wasn't on our shelf. They might have even done it before I was born. But I would always watch it, and the quality was always kind of low because it was a VHS recorded tape from like the early 90s. And when you're a kid, you have no context of this was his first movie. This came out in 1981. It was directed by Robert Altman. It was just the Popeye movie. And the movie, because of the fact that it was on this like blank tape with the word Popeye written on it in Sharpie, and the fact that the quality was kind of low, it almost felt like that the movie was itself like treasure. Like this weird otherworldly thing that wasn't a part of like other movies. Cause it is a really weird movie, but I loved it. And I actually just watched it, a couple of weeks ago because I bought it on DVD finally. And, watching that movie in the context of it being his first role in a movie, he was just such a fucking dynamic performer.
Mm-hmm.
Like he really was like limitless. And you know, we like to in the past decade or so, he's kind of, unfortunately, he had sort of become I don't want to say punchline, but you know, we had started to kind of poke fun at him in a way. Just because, like, maybe like his recent film, his last few films maybe weren't whatever. But I think now, unfortunately, in his passing, we're all kind of taking a step back and realizing just how he really is sort of carved onto the granite of our collective consciousness as children. And then, like you said, yeah, he was one of the first people that I knew as, like, Robin Williams.
Mm-hmm.
Where it's like...
I don't think he was ever a character for me, because I was never I was shown Popeye like later in life, and
oh, okay.
even when I saw it. I mean, not way later, but like later than you know, 7 years old or whatever.
Yeah.
I think I was probably like somewhere between 10 and 12, and I had no connection to Popeye, so I just didn't really get it.
Mm-hmm.
But that aside, I'm sure if that was my first thing, then I would probably just kind of think of him as Popeye. Or if I was, a person when Mork and Mindy existed.
Oh, yeah. See, I never watched Happy Days at all or mm-hmm. Mork and Mindy. I just that was never on the rotation of TV Land stuff for me.
Hmm.
I don't know.
Well, it's weird because TV Land and Nick and Knight. They sort of had these weird, they have like everything was sort of like, it's like whatever was on TV 30 years ago is what is on
now
on Nick at Night or TV Land.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, now it's like Cheers and things like, Designing Women and Murphy Brown and stuff, you know?
Yeah.
And I was like, ah, I remember when that was just on TV. Like,
yeah, no, it is pretty bizarre.
It's weird.
I remember
Jumanji was the first.
Oh, my God, yeah.
For me, like, I think Jumanji was the first I blockbuster movie that I remember, like hearing about and being like, that sounds awesome, I want to go to that, and seeing trailers and being like, that looks awesome, I want to go to that, I want to see that, and then getting to see it like on opening night, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And it just blowing me away.
Yeah, we I actually just watched that. This is so weird, but like I watched it on Netflix like maybe around April with my my roommate at the time, Hunter, and we were just so entertained by it in such a non-nostalgic way. I mean, yeah, nostalgia because we were like, oh my god, I remember this moment. But that movie, that's a great roller coaster movie.
Mm-hmm.
And one thing that we didn't really realize as kids is it doesn't pull any punches. It's very Roald Dahl in that way.
Oh yeah. Like,
Robin Williams plays a very dark, broken, vulnerable character. And, you know, your heart really breaks for him in that movie. And it's such a, you know, it could have been such a, you know, throwaway kid special effects movie. But he really grounds it. And, God, I remember his cadence, like, through the years. Like looking back, you know, when he sees Bonnie Hutton, he goes, like, Sarah? Like, Sarah Whittle? Like, I remembered that.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, the scene where he's, like, running around his house screaming for his mom and dad. Like, it, you know?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and I mean, I love that movie, and I love him in it, and then, you know, he would start doing, like, more dramatic roles and things, you know? Like, which, you know, kind of started in a big way with Good Will Hunting. Obviously,
oh, sure,
stuff
yeah.
Before then. But started in sort of a big way where he was just like, I'm going to be a dramatic actor now. Well, and so he did like Good Will Hunting and What Dreams May Come and Patch Adams, which I have seen Patch Adams more times than I'd like to admit, because I honestly, like, I have a weird soft spot for that movie because, yeah, it's really schmaltzy. Yeah, it goes to a weird place when that woman, that female doctor, is murdered. It goes to a really weird place. And I know that, and I'm aware of all of those things, but there's something about it that I can't help but really like.
I think the reason that he was he meant so much like to younger audiences, like, I remember going on Twitter and film writer Katie Rich said, like, does anyone else kind of feel like their dad just died? Mm-hmm. And it's because there was such an unpretentiousness to his humor. And I think that was something that was kind of why comedy nerds were kind of giving him a hard time these past few years, you know? Because
mm-hmm.
he would make movies like Flubber, and which I loved as a kid. He would make movies like Flubber and World, and not World's Greatest Dad, but like License to Wed and
right.
whatnot. And yeah, he might never have. But if you really ask people, like, I remember driving down the street yesterday on a way to a bar. Because me and my friends are just going to drink to Robin Williams. And, you know, Philip Seymour Hoffman was, like, a personal and professional, like hero of mine. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
But when he died, you know, my parents probably only had a vague idea of who Philip Seymour Hoffman was. Because they're not, you know, they love movies, but they're not, like, cinephiles, you know?
Right.
Like, the guy working at the Petco, you know, might not really have a big idea of who Philip Seymour Hoffman was, but just looking across the street in my front yard and just cars going back and forth and people going into stores, I'm like, there's no way not 8 people out of 10 don't have like a beloved memory of laughing with Robin Williams.
Mm-hmm.
There was such a joy to it. There was such like a whimsical quality to it, and I think that was why he meant so much to us as children. He had kind of this like Willy Wonka thing.
Yeah.
He was never making fun of someone the way like Adam Sandler would. He was just kind of just there, and I remember watching his Inside the Actor's Studio when I was like in middle school. Have you ever seen that?
No.
It's great. It's like 2 hours long. He just owned the room, and I remember laughing at that episode of Inside the Actor's Studio till like my sides hurt. And that was kind of one of the it's interesting that you said he started doing dramatic work because I think that was almost sort of a full circle move for him, because I mean he was a graduate of Juilliard,
right?
He was like a trained actor, and yet he still never lost this like the sense of play.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. because there was the only character that I can think of in any of his dramas that wasn't still funny, like even in like a creepy way, like 1 Hour Photo, Seymour Parish is really terrifying, and I remember that being like a big conversation with that movie, of how terrifying he is in that movie. But there's still that moment where you can't help but laugh when he's like in their house, like taking a shit.
Yeah.
You know, and it's just like it's just like a random clip of him just looking around, sitting on the toilet, and it's funny. Like it's sick, but it's funny. I think the only time I can think of where he wasn't really himself, at least partially, is probably Insomnia, which probably has a lot to do with why I don't really like that movie.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, you come to love watching him in movies that, you know, movies where they're not really utilizing him are kind of like weird, and utilizing him is really weird, because you look at like World's Greatest Dad, mm-hmm. and which is sadly kind of now his like last great movie, I think.
Because Merry Friggin' Christmas, I think, could possibly be really great.
That's good. It's so weird, man. Like, the day before he died, I was at Target, and there was a DVD for a movie called The Angriest Man in Brooklyn.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, oh, shit, he's in a movie again. That's cool. It went straight to DVD, but whatever. Like, you know, a lot of good movies do. And I almost bought it. And then I was like, wow, you know, money. You know what I mean? And I put it back. But that was so – it's so weird that, like, I don't know.
Yeah. Merry Friggin' Christmas is that movie that he did – he shot earlier this year that it's him and Joel McHale as father and son, and they're on a road trip together to like get home for Christmas.
Oh, that sounds like something that might, you know.
Yeah. Punch I think me it right could be the... really good.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. I mean, I want it to be good. And
yeah.
You know, he's in the third Night at the Museum movie, which I've always had kind of a soft spot for those, to be honest.
I've never seen any of them.
They're fun. They're good. They're good, like, sick day movies or, like, airplane movies. Mm. I'm particularly fond of the second one because Amy Adams is Amelia Earhart in it, and it's really fun. But, yeah, and but it's so – because, yeah, there's probably kids younger than us that know him as Teddy Roosevelt from Night at the Museum, you know?
Yeah, I guess that's true. Yeah, because, I mean, honestly, I think those are exactly the kinds of movies that I would watch as a kid, you know?
Totally.
Which is why, even though I've never seen them, they don't offend me that they exist at all. Like,
sure.
Because I'm just like, yeah, that's the kinds of kids' movies I want them to make. You know, yeah.
Where it's like, yeah, like it's like historical people and like they have adventures and Ben Stiller's fun. You know what I mean? Like, what's there to hate? What's there to hate about that?
Yeah, exactly, exactly. There was a time like in the early 90s when it was just like all I was watching basically were Robin Williams things.
No, totally. And you know, he could make everyone in my family laugh.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, that's kind of a really underrated quality in a performer, you know.
Mm-hmm. I even watched Toys a lot, and I never
sure, yeah.
I never even understood that movie. But I watched it because he was in it and I wanted to like it.
Yeah.
So I would watch it all the time. And I remember specifically, I would be watching the movie and, you know, I'm like 8 years old, something like that. By the time that hit video, I think I was probably like 8, and, watching that movie all the time. And my mom would just be like, why are you watching that movie? and I was just like, I had this deep desire to understand it, like,
sure,
it just didn't, because I was just like, but this isn't the guy from Mrs. Doubtfire and Hook, like, what
yeah.
is it? And like, these aren't like this, but it's about toys, but it's not. I don't and I was I just I just had this deep yearning to understand that movie.
No, totally. That was, oh man, toys.
Yeah.
And, you know, he was, you know, professionally, he was always a person I would kind of go back to because he sort of wrote the book on being able to deftly maneuver between dramatic and comedic work in a way that is common on the stage, but not so much common on the screen. Mm-hmm. Where it's like, oh, well, you're a funny dude. Like, well, no, he actually is, but he can also do this. I think that's all every comedic performer since him is kind of just they're working towards that level of fluidity in their career. You know, you look at like Will Ferrell or Steve Carell or Adam Sandler. Yeah, he kind of wrote the book on that for the modern era at least.
Yeah. Oh God, I used to watch Baron Munchausen all the time too.
Oh man, yeah. Because
that would come up on HBO a lot. He played King of the Moon.
Yeah, we haven't even fucking mentioned The Fisher King yet.
See, I never saw The Fisher King.
Oh, Scott, it's so wonderful. It's one of my it's my favorite Terry Gilliam movie, and it's honestly one of my favorite Robin Williams performances.
Yeah, I need to see that.
The first thing, everyone on Facebook was kind of, and social media in general was kind of just, you know, remembering and making statuses. But like, the only thing I could think to do was just put a scene from The Fisher King up from YouTube. And it's this monologue where he's walking Amanda Plummer home from like their first date. Mm-hmm. And I actually used to use that monologue in high school, like for auditions and stuff. Mm-hmm. Like that's how like I have that whole thing memorized.
And, is he the lead in that, or is Jeff Bridges?
It's
a buddy thing.
It's technically Jeff Bridges. Like Jeff Bridges is like a selfish early 90s like rich like dick, and then okay. It's kind of like a soloist Reign Over Me situation. Mm-hmm. Where like he meets Robin Williams' character, and Robin Williams is sort of like a eccentric guy that has like a really dark tragic past, and they sort of befriend each other, and like he learns from him and that kind of thing. But it's also a Terry Gilliam movie. Mm-hmm. There's this really beautiful scene where he's following Amanda Plummer through Grand Central Station, and then suddenly everyone, all the extras, like begin like waltzing around each other, and it's just this really beautiful because it's going on like in his head, and it's just this really subtly like really beautiful sequence that I always like affected me as a kid.
Hmm. Yeah, I don't know. I can't honestly remember the last time a celebrity, if ever a celebrity death affected me like this. He was just like, God, he was just so important.
Yeah.
Especially to our generation, I think.
Yeah. He was just he was almost like this mythical, like Willy Wonka or like Doctor Who kind of creature, where he was ageless and he was just always there, you know. Mm-hmm. And what's interesting is he was that for like three generations of kids, because like I'm sure people like maybe in their early 40s have him as like more Kremork, you know.
Right. Well, yeah, because I mean, you know, I just listened to WTF that he released
a couple years ago.
Yeah, it was like one of the early WTFs. Yeah. It was like one of the first ones.
That was like a big this podcast is actually like a thing
moment. Right, exactly. Mark Maron re-released it today mm-hmm. with his thoughts sort of wrapped around it.
Yeah.
And that was hard to listen to.
I listened to it when it first came out, but I haven't gone back. And I imagine it.
It goes to some dark places.
Because
he's just getting out of a divorce and with a new woman who I assume is the woman that he ended up marrying. That he was married to.
Sure.
When he died. Hmm. And Yeah, it's just, it's hard to listen to because he does talk about being suicidal
in yeah.
the episode. Because he talks about his problem with alcohol and stuff, and it's and of course he's doing it. He's talking about it in a way, in a very Robin Williams way. You know, it's
self-deprecating.
Not,
yeah.
Oh, it's very self-deprecating, and it's him sort of making fun of himself for being suicidal.
Sure. Yeah.
And it's, I mean, it's exactly what you would expect from Robin Williams, and it's just interesting because, you know, you hear Robin Williams committed suicide and you're like, oh my god, that poor guy, like, you know, obviously he was like going through some real shit, and
sure,
it's listening to him talk about it in a self-deprecating way, just like, you know, just 4 years ago, and it's like, but he's like, he's still Robin Williams, like, that's yeah. the weirdest thing, like, even though he is this guy that did what he did, he was still like, it was still Robin Williams. It's like the guy that we knew. Like, I don't know if I necessarily believe that. I think he was always using like comedy as like his he wasn't hiding behind it. I think he was using it
to try and survive. Yeah.
Yeah. To survive. Exactly.
And you know, that's, you know, but I'm not the first one to think about this, but on Twitter, a lot of people were sort of referencing that that joke that's used in Watchmen. You know, the like, but doctor, you know, I am Pellegrini. You know, like it's you know, comedians use what they have to maybe fight off stuff that maybe might be eating at them. And you know, I remember Brad Bird said the other day, it's tragic when hopelessness overwhelms imagination.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And, you know, but, you know, we to get really, really personal, we were all kind of sitting in a circle at our table on our porch outside last night, just a bunch of our friends. And, you know, it came up and, you know, we were talking about Aladdin and Flubber and whatnot. And, you know, we kind of just had this moment because, like, we're all performers. Like, I go to a school with actors. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we just kind of like, hey, just so we all know, I think this is a sadness that we can all maybe relate to an extent. And, like, we just, let's just all make a pact to, like, have each other's backs in case any of us ever feel, like, alone or, like, you know, for whatever mm-hmm. reason. And it was kind of like, man, if it's fucking, it's so tragic that this happened because he was such a source of happiness for all of us. And it sucks that he couldn't find that same happiness in his own life for whatever reason. I mean, I don't mean to assume, but you know, if this could maybe convince one person in the world to like maybe get help early, you know,
mm-hmm.
who knows? That's, you know.
Well, and it just makes me confused as a guy who, you know, I don't suffer from depression. I've never suffered from depression. I don't think I have trouble really even comprehending it, you know, because, you know, for the longest time, like most people, like the majority of the populace, you know, when you hear like, oh, someone was depressed, they're like, oh, they were really sad. Like, why couldn't just somebody just go like cheer them up? Like,
sure.
You know, and you don't. And now. It's sort of becoming more and more understood that depression is like a sickness. It's a chemical imbalance. It's like, it's an actual illness. It's not just like the way you're looking at a particular situation
sure,
or
yeah.
your life or whatever, but it's so hard to comprehend, in a way where, you know, like I can't help but think like, oh, you know, like like what would have happened if like I, you ever have that thing and it's so dumb and irrational and it's stupid and it's that thing where you're just like, you hear about like a celebrity dying or somebody dying that you don't even know or, mm-hmm. or somebody doing something or whatever. And you just think, man, if only I could have been there to talk yeah. him off of the ledge. And it's just like, I don't even think that would have helped. Like, and you know, and you see all these tweets from people saying like, oh, you know, if you're feeling depressed, and it's like, well, okay, first of all, depression isn't a feeling. It's a state of mind. It's depression. But they'll be like, you know, like if you feel that way, like go get help, go talk to your friends. People love you, blah, blah, blah. Like
sure.
You hear that all the time, anytime anyone commits suicide, mm-hmm. Especially celebrities. And, you know, I look at it and I just go, but like, does that help? Like, even if you were there every day, because it's not like he wasn't even alone. Like, he had his wife.
Yeah, and his children and
yeah, like, and he lived with his wife. Like, she didn't know that he had died, you know, and she had left for the day, not knowing that her husband was dead.
Yeah,
like, and just she left, and his assistant found him, and it's just like, I don't know what you could do to help that. Like, I don't know.
I've never gone to like a doctor and been I wouldn't say that like I have been depressed or I suffer from depression, but in the past, particularly when I was a teenager, I would get like just really heavy, and I remember reading on Tumblr once he said seriously that someone's once said and worded it fucking pitch perfectly. I wish I could remember who it was. But it was like, it's like you're sinking to the bottom of a lake. You're underwater. You're sinking to the bottom. And you haven't forgotten how to swim. You know how to swim. You just don't see the point. Mm. And that was like, wow, yeah, no, that's exactly how it feels whenever. And then I have absolutely no bearings on the trials and hardships of alcoholism or substance abuse. So I have absolutely no idea how one conquers that, you know? Mm-hmm. But what has been helping me in the past few months, whenever I started to get a little bit drowny, I mean figuratively, overwhelmed, let's use overwhelmed, I start to think of it as an allergy attack. Because, you know, if you're around pollen or a long-haired animal, you know, your eyes get puffy, you start sneezing a lot, but you know this isn't your natural state. You know, it's not like, well, I guess I'm just going to be sneezing for the rest of my life. You know, like, no, like, oh, I need to get out of the house or get some medication or not own an animal, and eventually I will return to my natural state where I'm not stopped up and my eyes aren't swelling.
Right.
And what I've been doing is kind of thinking like that, where, you know, I do get thoughts where like, oh, none of these people like you, you're alone, blah, 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 all this stuff. And that's never, maybe it'll never truly go away. But what I am learning how to do now is be like, well, that's not true. Or it's like, mm-hmm. That's weird that you're thinking that, but you know that that's not true. And like, I feel really shitty right now, but I'm going to go take a nap or listen to Weezer or watch a movie. And then eventually I will return to my natural state.
Right.
And that's sort of what I've been doing. I'm not going to say that that's a process that'll work for everyone, but, you know, you never know who's listening.
Yeah. Yeah.
If you're ever feeling bummed, that's what's been helping me out. And again, like, I've never been, like, diagnosed with depression or anything like that. I've never thought to go through that process, but, you know, sometimes I get kind of bummed.
Yeah.
But, you know, something you can do when you're sad, even now, is fucking pop in Aladdin, you know?
Yeah.
And that's never going to go away. Yeah. He fucking left such an impact in all of our lives that, you know, there's no way that, you know, when I have a kid, I'm not going to keep, like, Mrs. Doubtfire around the house, you know?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Oh, man, such a fucking... One of the most underrated endings to a movie is Mrs. Doubtfire.
Oh yeah, because it's they don't get back together.
They don't get back together, and it's seen as a positive thing.
Yeah,
God,
it's certainly like he does get what he wants, in so much as like he gets to be that's such a good movie. Like as silly as it is, like you just think about it, and it's like, oh, because he wants to be with his kids. But what he learns is that he needs to earn his kids.
Yeah.
And it's just like, oh my God, that's so good.
It's stupidly good considering what the premise is.
Yeah, yeah.
It's the best possible version of that premise.
Yeah, it really is. Man. Yeah, because the only thing that he gets from a selfish standpoint is he gets rid of Pierce Brosnan, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Like, that's it.
And then, like, he gets his new job.
Yeah. God, I'm always quoting weird lines from that movie too.
Yeah.
Like I quote the weirdest ones. Like I do the thing where it's just like what do you do after you box them? You ship them. Best of luck, smartass. Like I think about that all the time, and that beginning where he's like doing the voiceover on the cartoon. He's like hacking and
Figaro. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that's always the thing that first comes to mind when somebody's like, you know, Mrs. Doubtfire. I'm just like, oh yeah, that's the scene that pops into my head, and it's because it's the scene that I watched more than any other scene, because I would put in the movie and sometimes I wouldn't get to finish it, but I would always start it over.
Yeah.
Yeah. So,
oh, man. Or like we were talking about the scene yesterday where he tears the ornament off of Pierce Brosnan's car.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah, I think about that too. And the bus driver.
Oh, sure.
Yeah, his interaction with the bus driver. Hook is the same way. I remember the beginning of that movie much more than the end. After the stuffed crocodile lands on Hook, I can't remember what happens after that.
Yeah, well, it's one of those movies that when you're a kid it feels like it's 3 hours long.
Well, it's close to that.
Okay.
It's like 2.5 hours.
I always the scenes I remember the most vividly from Hook are just when he's first on the ship, like that first couple of scenes with Dustin Hoffman.
Yeah. Yeah, the thing that I always think of is that weird laughing transition that they do.
Oh yeah.
Where Spielberg has Dustin Hoffman laugh really weird. Yeah. Like a very specific rhythm so that it'll tie to the music in the next scene. And I'm just like, that's a weird choice.
No, it's Spielberg.
It's something, I guess. And I always forget that Julia Roberts is in that movie.
Yeah. And
it's her lone outing with Steven Spielberg.
Weirdly, yeah, it is. God, I think it's the same for most of those actors, though.
Yeah.
Dustin Hoffman, Robin Williams.
Yeah, because I don't think any of them came back because of how much shit they got.
That's a damn shame. Robin Williams and Steven Spielberg really... Williams and Spielberg really do fit together in a number of ways.
Yep.
You know, I'll never forget, I was reading a biography about... Steven Spielberg when I was like in high school, because you know I was just like obsessed with the dude.
Yeah.
And there's this really beautiful story that he was filming Schindler's List, and he would just always be so heavy after living in that world for so long, you know.
Yeah.
He would come home and just be so you know, not in a good place.
Right.
And he would pull up his phone and he would call Robin Williams and he would just be like, can you make me laugh? And Robin Williams would just start being Robin Williams and just talk about his day or just riff on something and do voices. And he would just make Steven Spielberg laugh. Like, as a friend.
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing is like, that's sort of who he became. in life, like toward the end, you know, because after what was his last big movie? It was like 2002, right? It was like 1 Hour Photo, Death to Smoochie, and Insomnia. Like those were.
He did that one with John Travolta, Old Dogs.
Well, what I was going to say is like, because that's part of like, that was like his third act is what I would call that.
Okay. Yeah.
Like RV, License to Wed, and Old Dogs, like that all feels like third act.
Sure.
Robin Williams to me.
Man of the Year.
Yeah. So it's like, you know, as those movies were coming out and everyone was sort of like dismissing him, and then it really felt like toward the end, like he started doing like, you know, he played himself in an episode of Louie, which was just a phenomenal episode.
Oh God. That was, oh man. That,
yeah. Yeah.
Fuck.
Such a good episode.
Yeah, they go to the strip club.
Yeah, yeah.
And they're all just so bummed that he's that guy's dead.
Oh, God. And then, you know, he was in the Crazy Ones, and he was just... And then during that whole time, you just heard all of these stories where he would just show up at a clinic. He would just like show up at a improv thing, and he would like become a fan of one of the troops that night, yeah. And then he would just get on stage and he would just help them. Like, he wouldn't even be trying to steal the show. He would just be like, you know, the tree. Like, he would just be whatever, you know. He would just be like whatever they needed to get the scene done, and then he would, you know, hang out with them afterwards or take them out to lunch or whatever.
It's kind of like just kind of like grandpa comedy.
Yeah, yeah. And he would show up at the Meltdown all the time and do like quick sets, like quick 15-minute sets at the Meltdown.
Yeah.
Just like on open mic night or whatever. And he just became that guy where he would just kind of troll around town helping people. Like like you said, like being like grandpa comedy. And it's like kind of beautiful. I don't know.
Yeah.
He's just God damn it.
Yeah. No, it's almost difficult to process when someone was still in the consciousness, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, cause sure. Like, I guess I never watched the Crazy Ones. I don't know if it was good or bad.
I watched the first episode.
It was a sitcom. Like, it was,
well, imagine Mad Men as a sitcom set present day with Robin Williams as Don Draper. That's what the show was.
Sure. Yeah.
That's what the Crazy Ones was. Yeah, no.
He did his Russian voice. He did his Jamaican voice.
Yeah. Yeah. With Sarah Michelle Gellar as his daughter. Uptight girlfriend. Uptight daughter.
His uptight girlfriend slash daughter. Yeah,
no, you're right, daughter.
Oh, man. Do you remember did you ever watch Whose Line Is It Anyway?
Yeah.
He had a great episode of Whose Line Is It Anyway.
Oh, was he on that?
Yeah, it was like you said, he just like showed up one day.
Man. Like the new one or the old one?
Oh, the older one, the one with Drew Carey.
Okay.
This was like early 2000s, I guess.
Yeah, the middle one.
The middle one. Oh, right, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, man. Oh, God. Robin Williams. Yeah. He was sort of, you know, it's weird. It was like, he actually kind of did, I don't know. It's almost like what he's been doing was comparable to what Bill Murray does.
Yeah.
You know, only that Bill Murray, it feels like, he's doing it for his own amusement and legendary status, you know?
Yeah.
Whereas Robin Williams, it seemed like he was just like, this would be a nice thing to do.
This would make someone smile.
Yeah. God. Maybe that's why I like Patch Adams so much. Like, maybe it's because it's just Robin Williams, really.
It's just kind of his, sort of his, oh fuck, words, his like mission statement, you know?
Yeah
Just curing people with laughter.
Yeah,
just being goofy, you know? Just not even like, you know, making like witty one-liners, but just kind of just like rolling around on the floor and just doing weird voices, which, you know, that when you're a kid, that's kind of, you know, or even an adult, you know?
Yeah,
it could be the funniest thing.
Last movie I watched of his, the most, where I watched it a lot, was probably Death to Smoochie.
Yeah, I really like Death to Smoochie. There was a period where it was on HBO a lot.
Yeah, yeah, it was definitely an HBO kind of movie.
Yeah,
I think FX is the cable channel that got it, basic cable channel.
Mm-hmm.
So it's on, it was on FX a lot for a while too.
Yeah,
but I don't know.
Yeah, I think the last movie I really was impacted by was World's Greatest Dad.
Yeah. I liked that movie a lot.
Yeah.
Remember
Bicentennial Man?
I do. I saw that. I saw that when it came out. I actually really liked it at the time. I don't know if it holds up at all, but I just remember it being really, really sad.
Yeah, I had to. My mom had to take me out of the theater when I first saw it because I was kind of going through like the old like Catholic like, oh, what is the afterlife? What, you know, my parents will die. I will die.
Oh, jeez.
And I was like 9 or whatever.
Oh no.
And that movie just very starkly deals with death and the passing of time.
Yeah.
And I was like, nope.
Yeah, I remember seeing it and being like, I remember thinking it was really good. I saw it on video, mm-hmm. and I watched it with my family, and my mom was just like, well, yeah, but it's bullshit. He's a robot. And I'm like, what do you mean? He's like, well, he's not going anywhere. He's a robot. He just gets turned off. And I'm like, did you miss the whole point? He's like, no, I know what the movie was trying to say, but that's not true. And he's okay.
we if I remember correctly, he becomes a human at the end of it.
Well, I don't think he becomes – he becomes more human-like, but the idea was that he didn't know if he would have a soul or not or something like that.
Okay, yeah.
And so when he dies as a human – yeah, because he's like upgraded so far that he like ages normally, I think, toward the end, right? Yeah,
but he's like 200 years old.
Right, and then when he dies – like that's what the movie ends and you never really know.
Sure.
And she was just like, yeah, it's really sad about him just being a robot and not going to heaven or anything. And I was like, what the hell? And that was like the first time like my mom ever said something that I was just like, what are you talking about? Like, can't the movie just have a nice ending? Like, why do you have to ruin it?
No, he just was met with oblivion.
Yeah. Because that's what happens to robots.
So that was the fucking dirty machines.
I was like, oh man, I was like, what? should I be looking out for a Terminator? Like, why do you hate robots so much?
Well, it's such an interesting way to interpret that ending as an audience member.
Yeah.
And they'd be like, well, no, he died.
Yeah, no, that's really sad that that he just stopped existing.
Yeah, all that hope and all that work, and he was still just a robot. Pretend that he had feels.
Yeah, that was exactly her reaction to it. It was the weirdest thing.
He just unmoved,
just completely unmoved, based on the logic that she had in her head. Sure. Built around religion.
None of the supporting evidence of the movie like did anything to sway her.
No, not at all. She was like, nope, bullshit.
Sir went to heaven, Little Miss went to heaven, but he didn't because he's a machine. Was that Mara Wilson the daughter in that too?
I think she was out of acting by then.
Okay. I think it was like another I'm a child actor right now person.
Yeah. But I don't think it was anyone that was like famous. Like I think sure, it was somebody that was just in. Yeah, it was Angela Landis, right?
Yeah.
Is that right? No.
I think so. But like I bet if I see a picture of her, it's like, oh, she was in like a bunch of commercials or something.
Yeah, I think she was just like the it girl for like a year, you know? Mm-hmm. In that cute window, the cute child actor window. Yeah.
Oh man, remember Jack?
Yeah. Oh, I watched that movie so many times.
Watch
I
love shit out of Jack.
I loved that movie, and I am fully aware that it is not accurate.
it's just such a weird movie.
Oh, it's super weird.
When you're looking back on it as an adult, like the whole subplot with like Jennifer Lopez and like. Or like Fran Drescher, mm-hmm. like they go on a date. Bill Cosby's in that.
God, I always remember the scene where he like buys them beer.
Yeah,
and I was always just like, isn't the same scene in Teen Wolf? Haley Kate Eisenberg, yeah. That's the little girl in Bicentennial Man.
That rings a bell.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I think she's Jesse Eisenberg's sister.
Really?
I think. She looks like Jesse Eisenberg. It could be a coincidence.
That's fun.
But the fact that she's her name's Haley Eisenberg and she looks like Jesse Eisenberg with long curly hair.
Sure, yeah.
Tells me that they're related. I could be wrong, though. It could just be a coincidence. Jack is and Jack, when he makes the when they make him eat like the spaghetti with all the junk in it.
Oh yeah.
And for whatever reason, when I was a kid, I thought that looked good. And I wanted to eat
yeah,
it.
Yeah, yeah.
I wanted to eat it, and I don't know why. I don't know. God, Jack, that's a weird movie. Francis Ford Coppola. Weird.
Yeah, I know. It's even weirder because it's Francis Ford Coppola.
Yeah. What a bizarre movie. Huh. It's creepier than Big.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Doesn't quite have that same, I don't know. So I read this tweet the other day that it was like Big wouldn't work nowadays because that's just how all 30-year-olds are.
Yeah, that was Diablo Cody. I think I retweeted that. Yeah,
that was funny.
Yeah, that was really fun.
Let's all really appreciate. I don't know where this is coming from, but let's just appreciate that we still have like Tom Hanks.
I mean, I think that's the next one, right? That's going to affect all of us this badly.
God damn it! Yeah, I guess so. Or like maybe like Bill Murray.
See, even Bill Murray. Like I love Bill Murray. Love Bill Murray to pieces. Oh, yeah. But the only like movie that I watched with him in it as a kid was Ghostbusters. Like that's it.
Oh really?
Yeah, I didn't watch any of the other ones.
You never watched like Scrooged or Groundhog Day?
Not to the extent that I watched Ghostbusters.
Yeah.
No. I mean, I definitely saw Groundhog Day, but I was old enough time I saw Groundhog Day that it wasn't like a thing I watched constantly. You know.
Mom, Dad never let you watch like Stripes.
No, I still haven't made it through Stripes.
Really? You don't like it?
No, doesn't do anything for me.
It's definitely of an age. It's definitely of a certain age of comedy.
Yeah.
You ever see Meatballs?
Nope.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Caddyshack? Nope.
What the fuck? You haven't seen Caddyshack?
No, I haven't seen. Never saw Caddyshack.
Caddyshack. Okay. If any of those movies, I would revisit. I would dip into Caddyshack.
Okay.
Caddyshack holds up.
All right.
It's
Dan Harmon. Dan Harmon calls it like one of those movies that are that people like despite it being a piece of shit. So that's why I've never really went out of my way to watch it. He was like, I love Caddyshack. Caddyshack's a piece of shit.
It's literally just they had a movie, they had a script, and then just Chevy Chase and Bill Murray and Ronnie Dangerfield just fuck around.
Yeah.
For like 2 hours.
Yeah.
It doesn't make any sense. They contradict like what's going on in the movie. There's this really magical scene. It's one of my favorite scenes in movies ever where a stuffy guy is like arguing with Rodney Dangerfield. Mm-hmm. He's like, "Hey, I want to golf." And he's like, "So what?" And he's like, "So what? So let's dance." And then he presses a button on his golf bag and "Any Way You Want It" by Journey starts playing. And he just starts dancing, and wow. then it's just a wide shot of him doing like a grandpa dance.
Wow!
And then it just cuts to the next scene.
Wow,
that's so great.
Weird. Before we start working on our thing. Do you have a favorite Robin Williams movie?
Oh God damn it! I gotta go with Popeye.
Yeah. Yeah. It's so hard for me. I mean, it's gotta be. I'm just trying to think of like the ones that I watch the most, and it's just like It's either Mrs. Doubtfire or Jumanji. I would assume it's got to be Mrs. Doubtfire.
Yeah.
Also, just because it was like that was like the movie I watched more than anything.
Yeah, definitely.
As like in that age range, I watched that movie so many times.
Not to shortchange Aladdin. I haven't seen Aladdin in a long time. I wonder if it holds up.
I'm sure it does. I think I missed the window on Aladdin on Blu-ray. Like, isn't it back in the vault now?
I don't fucking know. I don't know what the vault.
Yeah, I know. They just brought Hercules and Tarzan out of the vault.
Okay.
Today, I think I'm gonna go buy Hercules because I love that movie.
Tarzan don't gotta be in the diamond. The diamond collection. I don't know. I don't think every movie has to be.
Yeah. I never saw Tarzan. Tarzan came out in the period of time where I wasn't watching those movies. Like,
sure.
Tarzan and Hunchback of Notre Dame. And
ooh, I would be really interested to see for you and Matt to talk about the Hunchback of Notre Dame.
Mm.
It's definitely Disney's, like, ballsiest movie. Like,
yeah.
Like their ballsiest animated movie.
I just remember being so distracted by the fact that George Costanza was a gargoyle.
Sure. Those gargoyles are only there to keep it from being a drama. I bet they were watching, like, footage of it, and it's like, holy shit, guys.
Yeah.
Can something talk that's not supposed to talk? Jesus.
We need inanimate objects that can speak. Get There's the funny bald guy from Seinfeld, for the love of God.
And the Fay brother from Frasier.
just get me the Thursday night lineup from NBC.
Just let them riff for a little
one
bit.
One of each. It's give me one from each show, and it'll be good. Yeah, there was a point in the Disney animation movies where, like, there was like three or four of them in a row that took themselves very seriously.
Mm-hmm.
I think Pocahontas was the first one, because it was like Pocahontas, Tarzan, and Hunchback.
Yeah.
So it was like three or four of them. I don't know if there was a fourth one. It might have just been those three, but they all took themselves way too seriously, and it bummed me out. Hercules was the last one I watched and liked, I think, because Hercules was before Pocahontas, wasn't it?
I believe Hercules was after Pocahontas. Wait, no, I think it was Pocahontas and then Hercules. I remember I went to go see both of them in the theaters, and I think I was a little bit older when Hercules came. I think I contradicted myself like three times in the sentence.
Yeah, I love Hercules. I distinctly remember seeing that in the theater. I think it came out the same, if I remember correctly, it came out the same summer as Men in Black.
Yeah.
And so my whole summer, like that summer, that was like Men in Black and Hercules. Like, because I remember going to the same theater because my mom would do errands in town and she would just drop me off at the theater.
Yeah.
So I would go to the. I think that Space Jam was that year too. I think.
Man, really? That was one summer.
I think. God, I gotta look this up because it's gonna bother me. But
God, to talk about nostalgia. Talk about only liking something because of nostalgia. fucking Space Jam.
Space Jam is a god awful movie.
Yeah.
It's god. No, Space Jam was the year before.
So, Hercules was 1997.
Yeah. Space Jam was 96. Hercules and Men in Black was 97.
Okay. When was Pocahontas? 95.
So Pocahontas was the follow-up to Lion King.
Wait, hold on. I just threw 1995 out of my ass. I don't actually know. I just... 1995 felt right. I think it might be 96. I'm gonna look it up. This is so not interesting anymore.
It can't... Well, yeah, I... Hercules is 96, so it can't be 96. They wouldn't release two movies in a row.
They're not Marvel.
Yeah, they're not Marvel. They're just Disney. Wow, Fargo came out that year. That's so weird. 96.
Doesn't Fargo feel like it came out way earlier than the 90s?
Yeah.
Something about it just kind of makes it...
Well,
95.
It takes place in the
80s. Right.
That's
I was totally
thing.
Right.
Yeah.
95, Pocahontas.
Oh, that was the other movie. It was Mission Impossible.
Oh, okay.
That was the other movie that was like... It was like that summer was Mission Impossible, The Rock. Hercules wasn't that year.
97, huh. Hercules.
Oh, I looked up 96. My bad.
Yeah,
I was looking up because I got 96 in my head because of Space Jam. yeah, but man, it's a crazy thing. Somebody like him dying.
Yeah.
Yeah, like I said, I don't think there's another.
You know, they last forever, these movies.
Yeah, I don't think there's another actor who's gonna affect me this much when they die until Tom Hanks. I think that's. I mean, I can't think of another one.
Well, that's.
It's like Tom Hanks and Steven Spielberg. Like those are the next two that will just destroy me when it happens.
We just gotta enjoy them while we got them.
Yeah. Yeah. Spielberg, make as many movies as humanly possible.
Please. Just keep on giving.
Yeah. Okay. 1997 was Austin Powers, The Lost World, Con Air, Batman and Robin, Hercules, and Men in Black.
Yeah, that
sounds... And Air Force One. And Spawn and Good Burger.
Oh, my God. I remember... I remember that summer.
Wow. That's a summer.
That's a pretty good... Oh, my God. I mean, I was too young to see Con Air back then, but...
Oh, man. Yeah, I don't think I saw Con Air in the theater. I think I remember seeing it.
And when did Independence Day came out the same year as Hunchback of Notre Dame?
Yeah, 96.
96, Space Jam. Because I remember I had to choose.
Yeah.
And I chose Hunchback of Notre Dame because I was afraid Independence Day would be too loud.
Too loud?
Yeah, when I was a kid, I didn't like loud movies. I used to have to bring... earplugs to movies when I was like 4 or 5 years old, like for like a couple, not long, but like there was like a few months period where like if like loud noises just kind of freaked me out.
Yeah, I guess as kids we all have like that weird, everyone has that weird phase where they just like have like a weird tick. where I imagine like your parents are just like, oh no, is my kid one of the weird kids?
Oh no,
just for a second.
Yeah, the THX thing used to fucking like I just turned into a dog.
Oh yeah.
I'd be like, Jesus.
Well, I guess right when that was happening, that was like when surround sound was invented, like right around Jurassic Park, you know.
Yeah.
I remember seeing Jurassic Park in theaters and just being like, What is going on with the speakers? Like,
it's insane.
They're all around me. What's happening? I remember that being like a technology. God. Could you imagine like 4-year-old you seeing an IMAX movie?
Oof. I would have freaked the fuck out. I mean, I kind of do turn into a little. I remember when I saw Pacific Rim. That was actually, this sounds weird. That was the first time I had seen a proper IMAX movie. You know, not like, you know, extreme kind of big, you know what I mean? But like proper IMAX.
Right.
And I remember just being like slack-jawed the whole time.
Yeah. Yeah, for me, IMAX is like, we have an IMAX here, and it is technically a LIMAX theater. But it's still worth the price of admission to me because, one, IMAX screens have the best 3D. Because you can't turn the projection bulb down on an IMAX projector, so the 3D is always like out of this world, phenomenal, and then the sound is incredible, and obviously like the screen is bigger than a normal screen, but it's
not IMAX,
it's not like a huge massive IMAX screen, but that's a very small percentage of why I go see an IMAX movie anyway. So
sure,
yeah.
I don't think I'm going to go again this year. I've seen Pacific Rim, I've seen Gravity, and then I saw Godzilla.
You didn't see Guardians?
I didn't see Guardians in proper big IMAX. I might go see that. That might be my third time seeing it.
That's worth it. Do that and then call it for the year. Yeah.
Whenever I know that I'm going to see a movie multiple times, I always try to justify it.
Yeah.
Where it's like, okay, well, this time I'm going to see it in 3D, or like this time I'm going to do it like, you know what I mean? Like I can't just tell myself that I just want to see it again.
Right. it's worth the price of admission for the Guardians of the Galaxy title screen in IMAX. Man.
Yeah.
Like that title screen is just like, whoa.
And then just tiny Chris Pratt dancing.
Yeah, tiny Chris Pratt dancing down at the bottom. Oh, it's nuts.
That dude's going to mean something to a lot of kids.
Yeah, he is. Yeah, he is. Definitely.
And he's just getting started.
Oh, man. All right. Well, rest in peace, Robin Williams. And we have a screen for tonight.
Let's get to work.
All right.
Well, Alibaba had them 40 thieves. Sherry's already had 1,000 tales. Master, you in luck, cause up your sleeves, you got a brand of magic never fails. You got some power in your corner now. It's heavy ammunition in your can. You got some punch in the dance. You got who and how. See, all you gotta do is rub that lamp. And I'll say, Mr. Lancer, what will your pleasure be? Let me take your order, jot it down. You ain't never had a friend like me. Life is your restaurant, and I'm your maitre d'. Come on, whisper what it is you want. You ain't never had a friend like me. Yes, sir, we pride ourselves on service. You're the boss, the king, the shine. Say what you wish, it's yours, true dish. About a little more baklava. Pass on my column, eh? Try all the column B. I'm in the mood to help you, dude. You ain't never had a friend like me. No, my. No, no. Their little hands. Can your friends go woo? Hey, looky here. Can your friends go abracadabra? Let it rip! And then make the sucker disappear. So don't you sit there, smack your buggy hide. I'm here to answer all your business friends. You got me bona fide, certified. You got a genie for a child to pay. I got a powerful edge to help you out. So what you wish, I really want to know. You got a list that's 3 miles long, no doubt. Well, all you gotta do is rub like so. Hey-ho! Mr. Aladdin, sir, have a wish of 2 or 3. I'm on the job, you big nabob. You ain't never had a friend, never had a friend. You ain't never had a friend, never had a friend. You ain't never had a friend like me. You ain't never had a friend like me. Ha!